Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our Vatican Weekend English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Coming up on today's program, The Pope and the People. We have a report on Pope Francis's general audience, where he expresses his closeness with the victims of Mexico's earthquake, and in his catechesis urges people to dare to dream and never yield to negativity. Vatican Diplomacy Insight. The Holy See's foreign minister reviews world trouble spots and says we're facing unprecedented dangers due to the worst global insecurity since World War II. Motu proprio on Family Institute. Pope Francis has set up a new pontifical institute for the study of marriage and the family that expands the scope of the organization set up by his predecessor in 1981. And laity and family. Cardinal Kevin Farrell, formerly the Bishop of Dallas, speaks to us about the aims of the new dicastery he heads and the upcoming World Meeting of Families in 2018.
Quiero manifestar mi cercanía y oración a toda la querida población mexicana.
Pope Francis expressed his closeness to the people of Mexico after it was hit by a powerful earthquake and said he was praying for all those affected. He also had words of concern for the rescue workers involved in the relief operation. Tuesday's quake took place on exactly the same calendar date as the deadly 1985 earthquake that killed over 5,000 people in Mexico City. The Pope was speaking at the end of his Wednesday general audience, where he continued his catechesis on hope, urging people not to be afraid to dream and never yield to negativity. Lydia Kane reports.
Wherever the Lord has planted you, stand firm in hope. Never lose heart. Those were Pope Francis' words at his general audience on Wednesday as he continued his reflections on Christian hope. This week, the Holy Father focused his attention on teaching the virtue of hope, offering his guidance and encouragement, especially to young people. He told those present in St. Peter's Square never to yield to the negativity that tears things and people down, but keep building. Try to make this world conform ever more fully to God's plan, he said. Never despair, he added. Build on who you are.
Non arrenderti alla notte.
If you're on the ground, get up. If you're sitting, get up and go. If boredom paralyzes you, fill your life with good works. The Pope continued by saying that God does not disappoint. If he has placed hope in our hearts, he does not want to frustrate it with continued frustration. Everything is born to bloom in an eternal spring. Pope Francis invited Christians to use their God-given gifts of mind and heart to help our human family to grow in freedom, justice and dignity. Peace, the Pope said, is in the midst of men. Do not listen to the voice of those who spread hate and divisions.
Opera la pace in mezzo agli uomini.
Jesus, the Holy Father underlined, gave us a shining light in the darkness. Defend it, protect it. Speaking to the pilgrims present, Pope Francis encouraged them to dream, and concluding his catechesis, he said, live, love and believe, and with God's grace, be beacons of hope to all around you. I'm Lydia O'Kane.
The world is facing unprecedented dangers right now due to the worst global insecurity since World War II. That was the bleak assessment of Archbishop Paul Gallagher, the Holy See's Secretary for Relations with States or Foreign Minister, when asked about the crisis over North Korea. Speaking in an exclusive interview with Vatican Radio, Archbishop Gallagher also spoke of how the Holy See is following closely the plight of the Rohingya people, hundreds of thousands of whom have fled from Myanmar to neighbouring Bangladesh in recent weeks. The worsening Rohingya crisis comes in the run-up to a scheduled visit by Pope Francis to Myanmar and Bangladesh at the end of November. Archbishop Gallagher says the Pope raised his concerns over the Rohingya crisis with Myanmar's leader Aung San Suu Kyi during her private visit to the Vatican in May. In the interview, the Archbishop also spoke about his recent talks in Tehran with Iranian leaders about the difficulties facing Christians in Iran, as well as in war-torn Syria and Iraq. Philippa Hitchin began the interview by asking Archbishop Gallagher for his take on the crisis over North Korea's nuclear program.
Well, obviously, we are extremely concerned. The geographical position of the Korean Peninsula is fundamental for peace in the world. We know that there was no formal resolution of the Korean War, and therefore it is necessary to do everything we can to promote peace and security on the Korean Peninsula, because so many other countries are involved: China, Japan, obviously South Korea itself. So it's very clear what our objective would be. We remain committed, the Holy See, to promoting a nuclear-free world, a world in which, as the Holy Father said in his speech to the UN 2 years ago, a world based on an ethic of fraternity rather than the ethics of aggression. And so it's urgent for the whole world, and we certainly are hoping that the international community will continue to make pressure on North Korea. But as things stand, there is no real dialogue. There is no opening up of channels of communication, and therefore we remain very concerned at this time.
Are there any communications that you are trying to promote here at the Secretary of State, trying to, if you like, get a message across to North Korea there?
No, our channels with North Korea are very, very weak indeed. Possibly, if we go back 20 years, there was more communication between North Korea and the Holy See in those days than there is now. Obviously, we have close connections with the South Korean authorities. I received a visit from the National Reconciliation Committee only the other day, so we talked about things there. And everybody else who comes here to the Vatican in these days is equally concerned, and we offer them whatever encouragement we can. I've been myself twice to Pyongyang, but 20 years ago, as I said, and it certainly, we hope that the international community, through all its channels, can bring pressure to bear upon the regime. But as things stand at the moment, the way forward is very unclear. I think it is very important for the international community to see the crisis on the Korean Peninsula as also part of a general situation of great insecurity in the world today, in the Middle East, in many other places where there are conflicts. And this, we should be really waking up to the great dangers which are now facing the world, unprecedented dangers since the Second World War. And I think it is more necessary than ever that the world should be united in this way.
You're just back from the Middle East, aren't you? You were in Iran last week visiting with foreign ministers and other government and religious leaders discussing regional conflicts and the extreme difficulties for many Christians in the region. We know that Iran plays a significant role in the Syrian crisis. What signs of hope, if any, did you come back with as a result of your talks there?
Well, the Iranian authorities with which we engaged gave us to understand that it was their hope that the talks in Geneva would be strengthened, that their process would move forward. And although they are engaged also in talks, what they call the Astana talks, between Iran, Turkey, and the Russian Federation, that also the objective of those is to strengthen the Geneva process, guided by Stefan de Mistura. And that is hopefully leading the way forward to eventually a national dialogue upon which peace could be built. There's still a lot of work to be done, but the Iranian authorities gave me to understand that they were working in that way.
What kind of future is there, though, for the Christian communities in the region, many of whom are simply too afraid to go back, even if there is some kind of peace agreement?
Well, you're right in saying that it's not going to be easy. Those from Iraq and from Syria who have moved out of the region completely, some may come back, but we have to be realistic and say that many will not. Those who are in the refugee camps in Lebanon and in Jordan, they will come back if there is incentives and if there is the assurance of peace. There's initiatives also in Iraq about renewing the Christian villages of the Nineveh Plain. If these projects go forward, then there is hope, because the Christians play an indispensable role throughout the whole of the Middle East. They're a bit like the cement that holds a society, because very often there are conflicts between other ethnic and cultural and religious groups. And the Christians who've been there for forever need to continue to offer to be part of that society, to be citizens like everybody else, and to make their contribution for the rebuilding of these nations.
In Iran itself, there are only two Christian communities recognized, aren't there? The Armenians and the Chaldeans. The others, including Roman Catholics, Protestants, and so on, face significant difficulties. What did you see of this, and what discussions did you have with government leaders about these very real problems?
Well, our discussions with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, the Ministry of Culture and Islamic Guidance were very frank. We presented the situation of the Latin Catholics, and we showed our concern for them. It is true that there is a particular understanding of religious freedom in Iran, which we do not entirely share. For their idea is that we would call it freedom of cult rather than freedom of religion. And we tried to reassure them of the good intentions. At the same time, we must say that the Iranian authorities were very complimentary about the role, the contribution that Christians make. But it is also quite clear that the rules of the game are very demanding on our Christian communities. So I was hoping that my visit would help to draw attention to their plight and some of their difficulties. And we also began to establish some contacts which can be exploited in the future, which will enable us to face up to some of the practical problems of these communities.
The Iranian government itself is clearly keen on strengthening these relationships with the Vatican. We saw the president here meeting with Pope Francis last year. What possibilities are there of a papal visit to Iran in light of the president's visit last year and indeed your recent contacts?
Well, part of the reason that I went was to reciprocate the visit of President Rouhani and also to accept the invitation of Foreign Minister Zarif. For the time being, I haven't heard any talk about a papal visit. I think we're a long way from that. But the dialogue, which has existed for many years between Qom and the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue, goes forward. Relations are good. But one of the things that I have tried to insist on with the Iranian authorities is that good relations with the Holy See are also supposed to be reflected in good relations with the local Christian communities. And so we're trying to bring these two things together. It's a work in process, but it's a work worth doing.
Local news reports there in Iran said you also discussed the plight of the Muslim Rohingya minority in Myanmar. What is the Holy See trying to do to resolve this crisis, and what impact may it have on the Pope's visit to Myanmar and Bangladesh?
I confess I was quite surprised about the depth of feeling that existed in Iran and in the government over the Rohingya crisis. It was repeated both by political and religious leaders. The Holy See, well, as you know, Aung San Suu Kyi was here a couple of months ago, visited the Holy Father, had a meeting with Cardinal Parolin. We raised the issue of the Rohingya, and her reply was very much in line with some of the other things that have been said in recent days. But through Cardinal Beau and the bishops, we're also trying to draw attention to this. We don't doubt that the bishops will be trying to put pressure on the authorities in a very complex and difficult situation. But in preparation also for the Holy Father's visit to Bangladesh and Myanmar, we'll be following it closely. And hopefully there will be a resolution of this problem is terrible, almost unprecedented suffering of these poor people, which, as your Holy Father has spoken out now on a couple of occasions about this, showing great courage and also a degree, I would say, of disinterest, because at the times when he's spoken, there were certain things that we were trying to promote in our bilateral relations, which possibly were put at risk. But the Pope is very clear, as always, that the situation, the plight, the suffering of ordinary people is as important to him as the interests of the great and the powerful.
So even if the situation doesn't get resolved, it's unlikely to jeopardise his visit, is that right?
I really can't say at this stage. We've got there's a bit of mileage in it yet. But obviously you don't make a papal visit in a cocoon. And we have to see what the situation is, whether the conditions on the ground will still be favourable to the visit. I think, as we all know, it takes quite a lot to discourage the Pope.
That was Archbishop Gallagher, the Holy See's Secretary for Relations with States, interviewed by Philippa Hitchin. Pope Francis has set up a new pontifical institute for the study of marriage and the family that expands the scope of the organisation set up by his predecessor in 1981. Philippa Hitchin tells us more.
In a motu proprio published on Tuesday, the Vatican announced that the John Paul II Pontifical Theological Institute for Marriage and Family Sciences is being established to carry forward the work of the two recent synods of bishops and the apostolic exhortation Amoris Laetitia. Noting the important work that has been carried out by the original institute, founded in the wake of the 1980 Synod on the Family, Pope Francis says the synods of 2014 and 2015 have brought a renewed awareness of the new pastoral challenges to which the Christian community is called to respond. Contemporary anthropological and cultural changes, the Pope says, require a diversified and analytical approach, which cannot be limited to pastoral and missionary practices of the past. Instead, he says, we must be able to interpret our faith in a context in which individuals are less supported than before as they deal with the complex realities of family life. Faithful to the teachings of Christ, the Pope says, we must explore these lights and shadows of family life with realism, wisdom, and love. Like its predecessor, the new institute will continue to work as part of the Pontifical Lateran University. It will also be closely connected to the Holy See through the Congregation for Catholic Education, the Pontifical Academy for Life, and the new Dicastery for Laity, Family, and Life. The institute, which comes into effect immediately, will offer students courses leading to a diploma, a license, and a doctorate in marriage and family sciences. I'm Philippa Hitchin.
Staying on the theme of the family, it's been just over a year since the Dicastery for Laity, Family and Life was created by the Pope to replace the Pontifical Council for the Laity and the Pontifical Council for the Family. Since then, this new dicastery, as it's still often referred to, has been carving out a path under the guidance of its prefect, Cardinal Kevin Farrell, formerly the Bishop of Dallas in Texas, who was appointed by the Pope to take up the multifaceted role. Cardinal Farrell spoke to Lydia Kane about the workings of this office, the importance of the laity, and future projects, which include the 2018 World Meeting of Families, to be held in Dublin, Ireland.
Pontifical Council for the Laity and the Pontifical Council for the Family already exist, and they have existed since almost the end of the Second Vatican Council. They do a tremendous amount of work, and my challenge is to bring it all together and to combine or bring together laity, family, and life. And the logic of all of that, of course, is the fact that laity live out their lives generally, not always, but generally, in the married state. and it's the marriage state that gives life to the world. And so, obviously, it's a great challenge. Another part of all of this is to have lay people more involved in this new dicastery. As you know, the new statute of the dicastery calls for a prefect, obviously, and a secretary who could be a layperson. At the present moment, at the beginning, it's not going to be a layperson at the beginning. But the three undersecretaries, the person who's in charge of the section of the family, the section of life, and the section of the laity, must be lay people. So the challenge, obviously, one of the great challenges, is to find people who are competent and who have a certain amount of training to be able to cope with the many diverse situations that we find in the laity, that we find in marriage, and that we find in human life. When you think of it, that's not an easy task. It is has been a struggle to find international people, and international I mean by non-Italian, to work at the new dicastery. My task is to make this one unified effort to promote the laity in the church at all levels and all aspects. That's what, you know, the new dicastery will do. It will promote the vocation of baptism. That's what, you know, the new dicastery will do. It will promote the vocation of baptism.
At the moment, I mean, would it be fair to say then that the laity are underused?
I would say that not in every country, you cannot generalize. But in some countries, they're not utilized at all, the laity. You know, it's still the church of, as Pope Francis will tell you many times and has spoken about it many times, it's too clerical. And we do need lay people involved in the church and in the activities of the church. Not that they become clericalized, but they live their own spirit and their own spirituality, and they are an essential part of the church. The church is for the laity. It's their church. It is the church of all baptized people. Who did Jesus speak to in the Holy Land? Did he speak to the clergy? No. He spoke to other people.
Under the remit of your dicastery is the World Meeting of Families, which will take place in Dublin next year. It's now just under a year away. There was the launch there recently. How pleased are you with how the preparations are going?
I believe that the preparations are going extremely well. I was in Ireland for about 2 weeks recently. I probably visited about 20 parishes all over, not all over, in the southern part of Ireland. And I was highly impressed to find the poster of the World Gathering of the Family in all the churches I visit, with the exception of one, and that was a tiny little church. That just shows you to the extent. And I believe, although I was not present, but I have had some reports about NOC when they rolled out the program recently. And there is, I can tell you, internationally also a lot of interest, because I get correspondence, or rather the office gets correspondence here, requesting information about Ireland. I believe that Archbishop Dermot Martin has done a very good, wonderful job, and Father Tim Bartlett, they have worked extremely hard. They're putting together a very good program. So I believe it will be a great success, and everybody in Ireland should be there. And I hope that the Holy Father, I believe, as the Holy Father said to me, when I said to him, "Now you are going to be there," he responded and said, "Yes, Peter will be there. If I'm alive, I'll be there." Peter will be Francis. So, yes, the Holy Father would love to visit, love to be there for the gathering of the family. This is a unique and wonderful opportunity to support family life. I mean, when you look around, I get the international press what do you call that, gathering of all these articles every day. I read about what's happening to the families in Europe, in Latin America, in the Middle East, in Australia, in the Philippines, everywhere. The family is truly under attack. And this is a moment when we bring Catholics and Christians, not only Catholics and Christians, all people of goodwill who believe strongly in the importance of the family for the success of humanity. And let us not forget, there is no life outside of the family.
I was going to ask you about how hard it is for families today, and because there's so many challenges, there's economic challenges, there's pressures on marriage, there's pressures on young people. So how can the church sustain families in these realities today?
I think one of the most important things about the families and understanding the reality of the world that we live in. There is a point in Amoris Laetitia where the Holy Father speaks about perhaps too many rules and regulations, you know, make it difficult for families to continue their life. I think the pastoral approach of Pope Francis is unique and exceptionally well thought out, inspired by the Holy Spirit. I really do think it is to accompany people in their difficulties also. We have to propose marriage to people as the joy of the gospel, as of living what Christ spoke to us about. And it is a great opportunity, this world gathering of the family, to encourage each other to live the values, but not denying that there are all kinds of difficulties. There are people, you know, dead set against it, but we believe in marriage as the union between a man and a woman, and that it is through that interaction that life comes into the world. I think it is the document that the Holy Father wrote, especially after the most consulted issue ever in the Catholic Church. I mean, when you think it went all over the world, the questionnaires, it went all over, you know, we had two synods. When did we have two synods on any topic? Never. So it really was consulted, and the Holy Father really listened. He sat there through every session and took notes and paid attention to what was going on. This is not a document that was written by a couple of theologians that sat there who have no experience of human life. Well, I shouldn't say that. They do have experience of human life, but they don't experience marriage, many of them. Maybe some of the theologians did, but it wasn't written by them. It was written by a man who listened to the concerns of bishops from Africa, from Asia, from Australia, from the United States, Canada, Latin America, and the Philippines. And he tried to show us a way forward. And the way forward is that we care for each other and that we help people. We don't tell them a rule, we show them how to live. And that's why I believe that this is very important for Ireland and very important for the whole world.
In the lead up to this event, Pope Francis has been very keen that families reflect on the themes of Amoris Laetitia, hasn't he?
I will say that Amoris Laetitia is one of the very few church documents that any layperson can read and understand. It is written in a very simple, pastoral, down-to-earth language.
That was Cardinal Kevin Farrell, Prefect of the Dicastery for Laity, Family and Life, speaking to Lydia O'Kane. And that's all we have time for on today's programme. Thanks so much for joining us here on Vatican Radio. I'm Susie Hodges, and until next time, Laudato Jesus Christus.